I want you to imagine a scenario for a second. You open up a brand new, completely anonymous cryptocurrency account.
Okay.
You fund it, and then you place a $30,000 bet that the president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, is going to be ousted from power by the end of the month.
That is a very specific wager.
Right. Highly specific, high stakes. And then, just hours later, the U.S. military actually executes a surprise nighttime raid and captures Maduro.
Wow.
Yeah. So you walk away with a $400,000 payout. So looking at that, you really have to ask yourself, you know, was that just an incredibly lucky guess, or was that inside information?
I mean, that specific trade right there is exactly what's keeping regulators and, you know, politicians up at night. It perfectly captures the absolute chaos of this entirely new financial frontier.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are unpacking a stack of sources all about the explosive rise of prediction markets, so platforms like Polymarket and Kalshi. Our mission for this deep dive is to figure out the actual mechanics of how these markets work, explore the ethical minefield of insider trading in Washington, and map out this fierce turf war between state and federal regulators, because the growth of these platforms has just been absolutely massive. Actually, hold on. You know what?
What's that?
I feel like the word massive is just way too overused these days. Like, I hear it everywhere.
Oh, yeah, completely. Everything is massive now. You know, a massive software update, a massive failure, a massive sandwich. The word has totally lost its punch.
Exactly. So, ground rule for today's deep dive, we are officially banning the word massive.
I love it.
From here on out, we are only going to use words like, I don't know, staggering, gargantuan, or monumental to describe this industry.
Deal.
A monumental agreement has been reached.
Perfect. So let's unpack this. Because before we get into the, you know, staggering multi-billion dollar payouts happening today, we actually need to rewind a bit.
Yeah, we do.
Looking at the source material, this industry didn't actually start in some shiny Silicon Valley boardroom.
No, not at all. It started in a bar in Iowa City back in 1988.
A bar, of course.
Yeah, likely a spot called Joe's, or, you know, maybe the airliner. But anyway, three University of Iowa professors, Robert Forsyth, George Newman, and Forrest Nilsen, were having a drink and just complaining about inaccurate political polling.
Honestly, it's always a college bar where the best complaints happen.
It really is.
Yeah.
So specifically, the polls were predicting that Michael Dukakis was going to easily beat Jesse Jackson in a primary, right? And the professors just didn't buy it.
But instead of just, like, complaining to the bartender, they actually did something about it.
Exactly. They theorized that people are just far better at predicting outcomes when their own money is on the line. I mean, talk is cheap, right?
Right. If you have a financial wager, it forces you to strip away your own bias. You have to be completely objective.
Yeah, so they created the Iowa Electronic Markets, the IEM. It basically started as this political stock market just to predict the 1988 presidential election.
And it worked.
It worked so well that they eventually expanded it way beyond politics. They got into pop culture and even public health.
Yeah, the public health angle definitely caught my eye in the notes. They were predicting flu pandemics weeks in advance using these markets.
It's wild.
And if I'm mapping out the logic here, they were taking bets from frontline nurses and doctors, right?
Yep, exactly.
So if I'm an ER nurse, I'm seeing the coughing kids today. The CDC isn't going to aggregate that data and publish it for, what, another 2 weeks?
At least 2 weeks, yeah.
So if I bet my own money on a flu spike, my wager is basically acting as an early warning signal for the rest of the country.
That is the exact mechanism.
Yeah.
You are taking the decentralized knowledge of professionals on the ground and aggregating it. And when you pool all those individual bets together, it creates this incredibly accurate real-time forecast.
That's brilliant.
It really is. And they tried applying this to basically everything. By 1995, they were running markets on movie box office returns.
Okay, wait. I noticed that specific box office market got shut down by something called the 1958 Onion Futures Act.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I mean, sounds completely absurd. Why would the government ban betting on movie receipts using an act named after a vegetable?
Okay, so it traces back to this legendary market manipulation in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of traders in Chicago essentially cornered the actual market for onions.
Like physical onions.
Physical onions. They bought up almost all the onions in the country, artificially inflated the prices, and then they shorted the market.
Meaning they bet the price would crash.
Right. And then they flooded the market with their own hoarded supply, which crashed the price. It completely ruined farmers across the country. Congress was so furious, they passed a law explicitly banning futures trading on onions.
Wow. Okay, but how does Hollywood fit into that?
Well, decades later, there was a 2010 amendment that just tacked motion picture box office receipts onto that exact same law. They were afraid Hollywood studios could similarly manipulate their own box office futures.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. You definitely don't want a movie studio, like, betting against its own flop and then intentionally sabotaging their own marketing just to cash in.
Exactly. It creates terrible incentives.
But let's break down the basic math for you listening, because I think it helps to understand how modern platforms like Kalshi and Polymarket actually function today.
Good idea.
Think of it like trading shares of the news. So instead of buying stock in Apple, you know, hoping they sell more phones, you are buying a share in a specific event actually happening.
And the math behind that reality stock is just beautifully simple. You buy yes or no shares, and the prices of those two options will always add up to exactly $1.
Okay.
So if the market collectively believes an event is pretty likely to happen, a yes share might cost, say, 60 cents. That naturally means a no share has to cost 40 cents.
Right. So if I buy that yes share for 60 cents and the event actually happens, the contract pays out a full dollar. I make a 40 cent profit.
Exactly. But if it doesn't happen, your share drops to zero and you lose your 60 cents.
And those prices, they just fluctuate in real time based purely on supply and demand, right?
Completely. It gives you this live, constantly updating percentage probability of an event occurring. And it's driven entirely by the wisdom of the crowd's wallet.
Which brings us from those, you know, quaint academic origins in Iowa to the modern hyper-capitalist era we're in now. Because the scale we're looking at today is just gargantuan.
Truly gargantuan.
I mean, during the 2024 U.S. presidential election, users wagered $3.2 billion on Polymarket alone.
It's unbelievable.
$1.3 billion on Donald Trump and $827 million on Kamala Harris.
And that sheer volume completely changes the nature of the game. Because it is no longer just about holding a ticket until election day to see if you won. These markets actually allow for active trading and arbitrage.
Meaning you can trade the swings in probability.
Right. Take July 21st, which was the day President Biden dropped out of the race. A Kamala Harris win was priced at 29 cents. Just 1 week later, her price rose to 39 cents.
Oh, wow. So you don't even have to be right about the final outcome to make money. You just have to be right about the momentum of the news.
Precisely. If you bought Harris shares at 29 cents, and a week later she's trading at 39 cents, you could just sell your shares back to the crowd.
Classic arbitrage. You lock in a 10 cent profit per share by just trading the volatility of the news cycle itself.
Exactly. It's entirely independent of who actually takes the oath of office in January.
But that volatility isn't limited to Washington. If you can trade the news cycle of an election, you can trade the cultural zeitgeist of, well, pop culture.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at Super Bowl Sunday 2026 on Kalshi, the trading volume for that single day surpassed $1 billion. A monumental $100 million was wagered just on what song Bad Bunny would perform first at the halftime show.
It just highlights how granular these contracts can get when you open the floor to public interest.
Mm-hmm.
People will bet on anything.
See, I'm sorry, but I have to challenge this whole premise right here.
Oh, okay. Go for it.
You say this is a financial exchange, but come on. If I am putting my hard-earned money down on Bad Bunny's halftime song, I am gambling.
I mean, it looks like it, yeah.
Right. And we know that sports betting is strictly regulated. It's only legal in about 30 states. So how on earth are prediction markets operating in all 50 states under the banner of finance?
It all comes down to the plumbing of how the money flows. Think about a traditional sports book at a casino. They act as the house.
Right. The house always wins.
Exactly. If you lose your bet on a football game, the casino keeps your money. They have a vested financial interest in the outcome of that game. But prediction markets operate differently. They are order books.
Meaning they don't hold the risk.
Right. They just take all the money from the yes buyers and all the money from the no buyers. They pool it together and then distribute it to the winners.
So the platform itself doesn't actually care who wins or loses.
Not at all. They take no risk on the outcome. They just facilitate the trade and take a very small transaction fee off the top.
Okay, so because of that structural difference, the pooling of risk rather than playing against the house, they are overseen by the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, right? The CFTC.
You got it. Legally, these wagers are classified federally as event contracts or commodity derivatives, which completely sidesteps traditional state-level gambling laws.
Okay, I understand the legal loophole there, but treating real-world events like sports props creates a really dark ethical gray area.
It really does.
Because if you can bet on a military strike, What happens if you are the general ordering the strike? This brings us right back to that Maduro capture we talked about in The Hook.
Yeah, that Maduro trade is the textbook example of what has Washington panicking right now. Someone used a crypto account to place $30,000 in bets against very long odds, just hours before a highly classified U.S. military raid was announced.
Which is incredibly suspicious, and it gets deeper. Because in late March, specifically March 24th, the White House sent an email explicitly warning their own aides about insider trading.
Which is a huge red flag.
Right. Why? Because just one day earlier, there was a highly unusual spike in oil futures trading right before President Trump announced a delay on strikes against Iranian power plants.
And this gets to the core issue here, which is material non-public information. That's really just a fancy legal term for knowing a secret that is guaranteed to move the market before the public finds out.
Right. And if you are a government official actively shaping policy, you inherently possess that information.
Exactly. Which is why Congress is getting extremely nervous about this. Representative Richie Torres actually introduced a bill called the Public Integrity and Financial Prediction Markets Act of 2026.
And that has, what, 30 Democratic co-sponsors right now?
Right around there, yeah. And it aims to legally ban federal elected officials, political appointees, and congressional staff from trading on government policy or actions.
Let's actually pause here for a very important neutrality check.
Oh, sure. Good idea.
For you listening, we are going to be discussing several politicians today. Former and current presidents, Representative Torres, Governor Newsom out in California, who actually just issued an executive order banning state officials from trading on these markets.
Right.
But we aren't taking a political side here. We are merely mapping out how the government as a whole is responding to this totally unprecedented technology. We are not endorsing anyone's viewpoint, just reporting on the source material we have.
Absolutely. And just following the data shows, there is a mad scramble right now to establish rules. Federal prosecutors in Manhattan even met recently with Polymarket to discuss how existing laws apply to potential misconduct.
Wow. So if these platforms know that the regulators and federal prosecutors are circling, they must be desperately trying to build their own guardrails, right? To avoid getting completely shut down.
Oh, they are. They are trying very hard to prove they can self-police. Polymarket recently issued enhanced market integrity rules. It explicitly bans trading on stolen confidential information, illegal tips, or trading by anyone who holds a position of authority that could actually influence an event's outcome.
Okay. What about Kalshi?
Kalshi is also very vocal about their internal enforcement. They proudly noted that they opened over 200 investigations last year alone. They even caught a political candidate trading on his own candidacy.
Wait, really? Someone bet on their own campaign?
Yeah, and Kalshi banned him. They also handed down a separate 5-year ban for a user who was caught trading on material non-public information.
So they clearly want to prove they can keep their own house clean. But because the lines between financial derivative and straight-up gambling are still so blurry, this enormous turf war has broken out over who actually gets to regulate these platforms. Is it the federal government or the individual states?
That right there is the defining legal battle for this entire industry. The CFTC, the federal regulator, argues they have exclusive jurisdiction. In April 2026, the CFTC actually sued Arizona, Connecticut, and Illinois.
Sued the states directly.
Yes. The federal argument is that having a fragmented patchwork of 50 different state laws actually results in poorer consumer protection. They argue Congress intended for a single national framework for commodity derivatives.
Okay, but the states are fighting back. I mean, putting a billboard up in Las Vegas to actively mock Nevada regulators is a bold move for a financial startup, but that is exactly what Kalshi did.
It was certainly a choice.
Looking at a February 2026 filing from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the Nevada Gaming Control Board is actively trying to stop Kalshi. Competitors like Crypto.com and Robinhood actually paused their prediction market operations in Nevada just to comply with state regulators.
Right, they backed down.
But Kalshi refused. They bought a giant digital billboard on the Vegas Strip and completely leaned into the fight.
Which is wild. And state regulators view this defiance as an active threat to consumer safety. Nevada points out that these prediction apps completely bypass hard-won gambling protections. For example, Kalshi allows 18-year-olds to trade on their platform.
Wow. But Nevada law strictly requires you to be 21 to gamble.
Exactly. The states also argue these platforms lack mandatory deposit limits and the responsible gaming protocols that physical casinos are legally bound to follow.
I get why Nevada's furious, honestly. If a traditional casino has to jump through a million hoops just to verify a gambler is 21, it must be infuriating to watch an app allow high school seniors to bet on the exact same phone.
It really highlights the friction between tech moving fast and regulators trying to catch up.
And what complicates this turf war even more is that the federal approach has drastically flipped depending on who is sitting in the White House. Under the Biden administration, the CFTC was actively trying to restrict election bets, arguing they undermine trust in democracy. But under the Trump administration, the CFTC has taken a totally hands-off, pro-innovation approach.
Yeah, the current CFTC chairman, Michael Selig, who was appointed by Trump, even formed a task force specifically to advance rules that foster innovation in these exact markets.
That's a huge pivot.
And that regulatory shift is happening while the connections between the administration and these platforms are becoming highly visible. I mean, Donald Trump Jr. currently sits as a paid strategic advisor for Kalshi. He is also on the advisory board and is an investor through his venture capital firm 1789 Capital for Polymarket. Furthermore, Trump Media, where Don Jr. is a director, is launching his own prediction platform partnered with Crypto.com called Truth Predict.
Okay, if you are advising the platform and your family is literally making the geopolitical news that the platform trades on, I mean, that is a wild proximity to the source material. Can a federal agency actually successfully regulate a market when the lines between the government officials, regulators, and the platforms themselves are getting so deeply intertwined?
It is a massive, monumental question that ethics experts are raising loudly right now.
Nice catch.
Thank you. Representatives for Donald Trump Jr. have stated very clearly that he does not interact with government officials on behalf of Kalshi or Polymarket, and that he operates just like any other businessman in the private sector.
Okay.
But critics are quick to point out that sheer proximity to the president creates a totally unique informational advantage, especially in a market driven entirely by geopolitical news.
Well, whether the regulators and ethics experts figured this out or not, these prediction markets, they're not waiting around. They are already cementing themselves right into mainstream American culture.
They absolutely are. Kalshi has struck deals with CNN, CNBC, and most recently, Fox News.
Yeah, the Fox News deal is the perfect example of this media integration. Fox is going to integrate Kalshi's real-time forecasts directly into its broadcasts alongside their regular reporting.
Fox did say it will still rely on its own polling for elections, but the Kalshi data essentially functions as paid product placement that just blends seamlessly into editorial news.
It's like turning the news ticker at the bottom of the screen into a live Vegas odds board. You're watching a crisis unfold on TV, and right beneath the footage, you see the odds of the crisis escalating, just ticking up and down in real time.
It's a surreal experience.
Does putting these odds on live TV actually influence the reality of the events? Are we creating a dangerous feedback loop where the bet actually drives the behavior?
That is the big philosophical divide right now. Proponents of prediction markets argue that this cuts through the noise and the misinformation. Their logic is that pundits lie, but money doesn't.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Exactly. If you want to know what is actually going to happen, look at where people are risking their own cash. Critics, however, are deeply worried about the gamification of global events.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They fear it turns wars, elections, and natural disasters into mere speculative assets for viewers just sitting on their couches.
We have really traced an incredible journey today. This concept started with a few professors in an Iowa bar trying to beat a bad primary poll. And now it has evolved into the staggering industry where people are dropping $100 million on Bad Bunny's halftime show.
Yeah.
And it's sparking a regulatory turf war involving the White House, the CFTC, and the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals.
It leaves us with something pretty profound to consider. Honestly.
What's that?
Well, if prediction markets become our primary lens for viewing the news, where every geopolitical crisis, every election, and every disaster have a live, fluctuating price tag attached to it, how does that change human empathy?
Oh, wow.
Right? If you buy a yes share at 40 cents on a foreign conflict escalating, do you stop caring about the human impact on the ground? Do you start secretly rooting for the disaster just because it means a payout for your portfolio?
That is a chilling thought, but an incredibly important one as this technology becomes completely mainstream. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We really hope you walk away with a much clearer picture of how these markets are literally pricing the future. And as promised, I would like to point out that we successfully made it to the end of the show without overusing a certain banned word.
A truly monumental achievement.
Think about that empathy question the next time you see those odds ticking on your screen.